Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fake the Nation, episode 369.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, and where we weigh in on the canon of film. I'm your host, Nagin Farsad. And from time to time, I like to think of myself as a lady who knows something about movies. And so today, we are going to weigh in on Time's official list of 100 best films from the last 10 decades. We'll also ask if landing a man is still part of the discourse for feminists. And finally, what are the actual reasons that people have abandoned church? Today's panel is, it's one for the ages, you guys. We are joined, this first panelist, you've heard her on this podcast before. You've loved her on this podcast before. She is creator and host of the Stacks podcast. Her Zoom background indicates nothing but someone who is like a true aficionado of all books, literally any and all books. She gave me a fabulous list of beach reads for last summer, I think, or maybe it was Christmas reads. I can't remember. But it was like I was going to have, you know, maybe like 4 hours of dedicated reading time. And Tracy gave me just this amazing list that obviously I have not gotten through because like it was 4 hours. And then 6 months later, I had another 4 hours. But it is the wonderful Tracy Thomas.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
So happy to have you back. We are also joined now for the very first time. We've been chit-chatting because we had some time zone issues. And today is an episode of just miraculous time zone because this comedian is hailing from the United Kingdom. Maybe you've heard of it. Like I said, she's a comedian. She is an author. You can buy her book, I believe, right now or very toot sweetly. You can buy her book Sex Bomb, which you absolutely should. She is the one and only Sadia Azmat. Hey, Sadia.
Hi. It's so lovely to meet you ladies. Thank you for having me.
Oh my God. And you're talking to us from in the future because you guys are about 5 hours ahead. And so you'll let us know if anything major has happened globally that we need to know about 5 hours into the future. Before we get into the show, I just want to remind people that if you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. We are posting an episode. The next episode is about, you get bonus episodes, by the way, if you subscribe. And the next one is about a dude who runs around on all fours. And apparently it makes you ripped. So are we all going to join this craze? We talk about it. We also talk about the phenomenon of, like, scientifically, like, you're not supposed to drink before you're 40. And we give you all the reasons why, plus all the feelings reasons why. So these are fun, ridiculous bonus episodes of Fake the Nation. Get yours at patreon.com/Nagin Farsad. And by the way, we're recording this a little earlier than usual. So the topics from the news that we maybe cover that happen on a Wednesday or something, like, we are not covering those. But don't worry, eventually we'll get to all of it. It's the dead of summer. What do you even need to, you know about? Except for these topics, which, let's get into it with topic number one. So we read a piece in Glamour magazine from Olivia Foster titled, "We Call Ourselves Feminists, But If Having a Man Is Still Seen as the Ultimate Goal in Life, How Far Have We Really Come?" And obviously, the title of the piece struck me as something that we should talk about. She describes being single by choice for a period of time, but felt the pressure to conform and settle into a couple. You know, we sort of like talked around this in various topics, but I wanted to get into it. Because there's like something about this piece that felt a little, I don't know, maybe straw manny or something, which is straw man or straw woman. My question is, do you see this kind of pressure in your circles?
So basically, I hate that a lot of the rhetoric about this seems to be women always like putting pressure on women to be feminist. Mm-hmm. I don't identify as a feminist. And I think if you want a partner, like if you want to have a partner, you should be able to kind of have that, and it shouldn't take away from who you are. And I think our perception of that being backwards is a bit weird, because it's a human instinct slash need, and it might be, you know, just for sex, it might be whatever you need. But I think we always make it harder for women in terms of like being like, we always have to kind of be something extra, or we can't just be ourselves without everything being caveated, or is that the right term? I don't know. But it just feels like I don't subscribe to feminism anyway, so maybe that's where I start basically on that.
Well, Tracy, what did you think about this? Because the National Statistics Office has actually reported that women not living in a couple or have never been married are rising at every age under 70. So it's like a demographic that seems to be increasing. I don't know. Well, how did this piece strike you first? And then I'll tell you my odd reticence.
First of all, I think that it's like very heteronormative to define feminism through like relationships to men, because first of all, there's plenty of queer people and people who are, you know, feminists who are maybe don't identify as women and stuff. And so I think this idea that feminism is this one thing really hampers this argument across the board, because I think it's super limiting. And I think that the word feminism is just really undefined for a lot of people, or it's defined too hyper specifically. And so people can decide like, oh, this is a feminist argument and this
isn't, right?
But there's an agreement. Yes. And so you can write this piece without any specificity about what feminism looks like. And that's for me where it sort of gets murky, because I'm like, well, what are we talking about here? I mean, I just saw the Barbie movie, and allegedly that's a feminist movie. But like, according to whose feminism, you know what I mean? Like, for me, I found that movie to be sort of retrograde in a lot of ways. And so I think we're talking about this idea of like, quote unquote, feminism, but there's no real working definition at this point that people are agreeing on. And so I think it leads to pieces like this that are like, okay, I guess, go off.
You know, because I think the funny thing is, I was just, we were on a like sort of a little bit, a little day trip yesterday, and we were in a car, and there was this this gay dude driving, and a friend of ours, and then a woman who was you know, middle-aged woman who's also single or whatever, and they were both talking about like wanting a partner, and we were like talking about like, you know, because I was like, okay, let's break it down. Like, I want to see if I can be a matchmaker, because that's like my secret goal in life. And then, but it just, it's interesting, because it's like he wanted a partner as much as she did, but is her wanting one somehow now anti-feminist, right? Like, and me wanting to support, like, it didn't feel like her wanting one felt like any kind of failure on her part, just as it didn't seem like him wanting a partner felt like any failure on his part. Like I feel like part of the thing is like it's okay to want a partner, and it doesn't make you a feminist or not a feminist. You know what I mean?
Right. And I think also like in the piece, she talks about how like when she wasn't in a relationship, people would ask her a lot about it. And I think that some of that also is just like what we're sensitive to. I have friends who don't have jobs, and they get very sensitive when you ask them how the job search
right,
is going.
Right, right.
You know? And so I think some of it is just feeling like maybe your friends are being nosy in a way that you don't want them to be, whether it's about a job or if you're trying to buy a house or whatever that thing is. You know, I think there's a lot of like small talk that people have amongst their friends, and that sometimes it just feels like, why are you attacking me about this?
Even though it's
just
not.
Like, we're at brunch.
Well, it's exactly.
How's
I think
it going?
Part of it is just this, and this is this born of the patriarchy? Possibly.
Probably yes.
Probably yes. But it's like there's that thing of like we're sitting around a table, like everybody wants to gossip about sex and dating and, you know what I mean, crushes and whatever. Like, it's like, it feels like also, I mean, part of that is, yes, born of the patriarchy. Part of that is also, I don't know, like fun and lovely. I don't know. Like, there's also a world in which it's like, I love talking about like someone's, dating life or whatever, not in a way that I think they should get married. I just think it's like fun. Right. So part of me felt like this article is just a little bit of, you know, shouting at the wind for being wind or something. That's not an expression that anyone's ever used or one that makes sense. So here's my other question, Sadia. Weigh in on this. In the piece, she points out that couples are celebrated, you know, for being a couple. There's the wedding. There might be some anniversaries. And that we celebrate coupledom way more than we celebrate other achievements in life. Did you find that to be too true? Should we be celebrating other things more so that we're kind of taking the focus off of it?
I mean, the longevity of relationships these days is so rare. So I think that it's great we celebrate them because, there's the livelihood of relationships. When I was growing up, like my family and my parents and those, that generation, they would just stay together forever.
Are your parents immigrants?
To the UK, yes.
Yeah.
Well, not my mom, but my dad.
From what country was he from?
India.
Okay, got you.
So obviously I was just being silly there, but I think, you know what? There is a lot more in terms of like self-care. So I don't think that there needs to be this like single people versus married people. There doesn't have to be that. Like, it feels like that's where she's going with that.
Right, and right.
I think if you're single, then you probably are doing a lot of celebrating of yourself every day. there's a lot of me time. So, you know, and couples are busy and maybe they don't have a lot of time to share their kind of, or reflect and stuff. Like, because, you know, if you have family and kids and like you get swept up away, it's nice to have these timely reminders. Whereas like when you're single, you have literally all day to think about yourself and where the fuck things went wrong.
But this kind of reminds me, I don't know if you get to also talk about an episode, a show that people have written, I'm sure, multiple PhD theses on, Sex in the City. There's probably every sort of feminist and anti-feminist argument made about that show. And one of the episodes was Carrie. You guys have seen the show, right? Have you seen
it?
Yeah,
of course. Of course, definitely.
Yeah. There's an episode where Carrie like gets a, she has to buy something because of a family celebrating a something. I don't remember what this was. And she was annoyed that she was just like, I'm single, but I keep having to like buy gifts for these other couples or families or whatever.
Because I mean, they're doing it's definitely more expensive being single if you want to bring money into it. Remember that episode. That's the whole thing she was talking about. Is like,
exactly. And then
she wants to spend her money on Manolo Blahnik.
Right.
For shoes,
and so she sends them like a, you're invited to like, here's my registry for being single, and she got a pair of free shoes out of it, right? Or a gift of shoes to celebrate her singledom, whatever you want to call it. And
it's narcissism too much for me. Like the level of narcissism involved in that, I just couldn't justify that. I like new hijabs and stuff, and I know some people, like, you know, would love to do that and get people to buy them stuff. In fact, with Cash Apps and stuff on Venmo, whatever, the people always like on Instagram putting their details, buy me a coffee, send me $50 and stuff. But I don't know. I don't. What do you guys do? Do you do that, Tracy? I just don't.
I mean,
feel
I could
like
never imagine in a million years sending someone a registry for like, I'm single, but, you know, here are the shoes I'd like. I can't in a million years.
It's weird. It's so weird.
I don't know. Tracy, what do you think?
No, I would never do that.
Yeah.
But I want to send you money, Tracy.
Well, I mean, if you want to send me money, fine. But like, I'm not going to be like, hey, I would love a new book. Like, I need one.
I think that's a good idea. I think it's like, we're okay with money. People often, why is it that people don't ever want to send money? I had a friend who like, a guy was like willing to send her like sexy clothes or whatever. But like, we just want money. That's the takeaway from this episode.
So did she allow him to send her sexy clothes?
Anyway, I shouldn't probably talk about it in case she listens to it. But anyway.
No identifying features.
Who is this person? Well, give me some. I want her address. I want her social security number.
I mean, there's some, you know, I think it's like, you know, it's a sensitive art to it. And I think that if you're like that person who just wants free things from men, that's weird. But if it's like a arrangement where you kind of, I don't know, like if there's an understanding, it's a little bit different, but it is a difficult thing. And I don't feel comfortable with that. But yeah, maybe I'm wrong.
Well, Sadia, are you're Muslim?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I'm also Muslim, so sorry, Tracy, odd man out.
She can come back. We welcome you, Tracy.
I know,
Tracy.
It's actually really easy.
I'm just going to hang out over here and do your thing. I'm excited to learn. Listen and learn, as the white say.
Thank you for books.
So you said you're not a feminist. Where do you, like, do you have a, are you like just not doing labels? Where are you on that kind of thing?
Do you really want to know? I think that, you know, if I'm honest, I think whatever team you're on, you should bat for your team. Women are better, right? Like, I'd like to believe that. I don't know. I think, you know, okay. Equality is great. I think equality is difficult to really kind of conceptualize and to sustain as well. And equality means different things for different couples, different people, different situations. It can mean that you both contribute, but maybe not in the same way. Uh-huh, and so yeah. I have loads of issues with feminism for a start, in terms of like the way that it feels forced upon women, and it doesn't feel like it's a choice, because it feels like there's also a lot of shaming when it comes to it, in terms of living up to it and who it represents and what you contribute to it versus what you get out of it. And like, obviously it achieved a lot of good things in the beginning, but also it feels as though like its latest wave, it just like this whole kind of equal pay doesn't seem to ever get figured out. So I'm just not on board with it.
Fascinating. I feel like we could talk for hours about that, but we cannot, because we need to break so that we hear from our sponsors. And then also we're going to come back and we're going to talk about something entirely different. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we are back, and we're ready for topic number two. So we read a piece in The Atlantic that's trying to explain why millions have left the church by Jake Meter. And it's true, 40 million Americans have stopped attending church in the past 25 years. That's about 12% of the population. It's the largest decline in church participation in history. And I don't know what the numbers are in the UK, Sadia, but I imagine that there's something similar going on. There seems to be a bit of a global trend in church attendance. And before we get into it, let me ask, did either of you have a relationship with a church or institution and have you left one, and did any of this ring true for you?
Do you want to go first, Tracy? I was just going to say that I think the membership to Satanist church is going up. I'm joking. Sorry. Tracy, you can answer first.
I have the weirdest religion. I mean, not weird. I think that what I'm about to say is like very normal or semi-normal. I'm mixed. So I'm black and white. I'm also Jewish. My mother is Jewish. And we were raised to do the thing that I think a lot of Americans are, which is like Christmas, Easter, but also Hanukkah, Passover. We do a little Yom Kippur here, a little Rosh Hashanah there. Yeah. I went to Catholic school because I lived in a city that had terrible public schools in Oakland, California. Mm. And so Catholic school was the cheapest private option. So my school was over 50% not Catholic. So like we took religion classes, but the religion classes were like marriage and family and like, you know, world religions, and like it was much less like Catholic than I think some people who went to Catholic school experience. So I know a little bit about religions, but I am not religious, and we didn't grow up going to church at all. We would go to temple on the high holy days. Very loose relationship to religion. Still have a very loose relationship to religion. Culturally related to the Jews. Culturally, you know, like being part of that community, but as far as like going to church, couldn't be me.
Right. I mean, is there part of you that wishes that you would, or I don't know. Is there,
no. So I've been thinking a lot about this actually. So this piece was interesting to me, but, and I think this is probably true in Islam, is like which is different than in Christianity, but it's true for Judaism as well, that the text that we use, you know, for the Sabbath or for Yom Kippur or whatever, is the same text all over the world. Mm-hmm. So everyone says the same prayers. And for me, like if you go to church for Easter, who knows what your fucking pastor's going to be reading? He could be reading anything from the Bible. He'd be talking about anything. But if you go to Passover, you know you're going to hit the same exact words. And to me, there's something very powerful about that, but also freeing that you don't have to be part of a church or a temple or a mosque or whatever to do that. You can just go to the text directly. And so I've been really, as I get older, as I've had children, like wanting
you
to go
back. You don't have
to
children.
Some of that stuff.
Oh my God, you look like a baby. The hell? Both of you are making me feel.
Thank you.
I'm so sorry. I'm leaving the podcast now. I can't believe you look
I'm
like
probably
you're 12.
Older than you. Crazy. No.
She's got the filter on.
No, she has filter, but like she said, children. Plural.
I have good light.
She did
I have
the
morning
same
light.
One.
I have twins, so one pregnancy. So it's not like I've had years and years of childbearing. I had one and done. But anyways, the point is sort of like there is something comforting about knowing that millions of people are sharing in the same textual,
yeah, right, yeah.
Like, you know, like that they're like that you could go anywhere in the world and walk into any temple in the world and you could say the prayer and everyone is saying it with you.
I mean,
you.
That's
and,
what's
like,
comforting
me,
about
really
McDonald's.
Powerful.
You remind me of Patrice O'Neill, the late Patrice O'Neill's joke about this, where it was like, I don't want to go to hell for believing in the wrong religion. You know, I don't want to be like praying to one God and then like, it's the wrong God. I could have been sleeping with prostitutes and shooting people.
Well, I mean,
and I do think that like church provides like a moral or like religion provides some sort of moral compass. Though I don't know. I don't know.
For me,
that
if
I
there was no like religion, I would be so fucked up. Like I already am not.
Do you think?
Yeah, I love that there is this kind of faith or, you know, guidelines, whatever you want to call it. Because like I think if there wasn't Like, I don't know, man, if I didn't have, if you didn't have like a something to tell you is really bad to whatever that insert fill in the gap, then yeah, it would just be difficult to not do stuff. So yeah, I really love it. I think Negin will know as well that like women don't have to go to the mosque. So we obviously went to learn like Arabic and read the Quran when we're young, but it's kind of flexible for women. Like men have to pray in a mosque 5 times a day. I love mosques. I find that they're very peaceful, but I don't have one local to me necessarily, but I did have one local when I was growing up. And I think there's something really good about the thing with Islam is that because we're not really, we don't worship like statues or idols and stuff, like it makes your faith like strong, because you kind of have to like your prayers. I don't know, they kind of, you really stick on the prayer rather than like, you know, other faiths sometimes they kind of have these symbols. And that's I feel like we have a strong connection basically. And so, yeah, I think it's, what are the reasons that people have stopped going in America?
Well, so in the piece, the writer gives some obvious reasons for de-churching, which is what they call de-churching, like corruption and abuse scandals. But the main one that the writer posits is, and I'm quoting from the piece here, contemporary America simply isn't set up to promote mutuality, care, or common life. Rather, it's designed to maximize individual accomplishments as defined by professional and financial success. Such a system leaves precious little time or energy for forms of community that don't contribute to one's own professional life or, as one ages, the professional prospects of one's children, which really resonated with me. Literally, that people are just too fucking busy with the entire. With
I think
the
it's
main
sort of values is a value thing. I think busy,
yeah, it's
is
a capitalism
relative
thing.
Yeah, exactly, because I think with I've really recently realized that there's enough hours in the day. Like if you have time for your nails to get done, if you have time to do shopping, whatever, right? So you can make time. I think it's like the thing that you said at the beginning of that recap of the piece, which is that it's just we just don't like prioritize it, which I think is an internal thing that I think we could work on better. But I think, you know, we're being pushed in other directions. And so kind of
I do feel, I mean, I definitely feel like, so it's the kind of like capitalist imperative to like work really hard and put in really long hours that leaves people really tired when they come home. They're in these structures where they're not living communally with other family members. There's not enough people to take care of the kids. It's a constant battle for childcare. And in that setup, you're too tired to then on top of it go to church. I mean, I feel like that kind of explanation makes a lot of sense to me. What I do feel like is also happening is because of this now void where it's sort of, you know, most people don't go to church. There is this, I feel like a sense that I've gotten from people that there is an appetite for this kind of community building and for the public service acts that church encourages. And that I feel like is missing. And the example I'll give is I've mentioned it on the show before, but I'm one of the founding members of the Friends of Tompkins Square Park. Not to brag, we're an organization with no money, but lots of gardening shovels. And, you know, we try and take care of this, improve this park when we can. And every week, many of the weekends of the summer, we have met, and I go when I'm able to. And there's just this, like, amazing core, like, handful of people that go every week. And then also every week, you know, we post our events on Eventbrite or whatever, and then the Parks Department website and all that stuff. There'll be just like 20 random people that come. There's half of them are from the neighborhood. The other half are just like from random places in New York City. There'll be people that are traveling to New York and want to get in some service time. And they'll just be like here on a trip, and then they'll come and do some gardening, right?
I feel
to me is like, really, like, people need to have public service in their life, and they need more structure to be able to do that. And that's something that church was doing and providing, and it's not doing that anymore.
I think that there's two things in what you're talking about. One is that there's also been a huge loss of like the third space, mm-hmm. that like in general.
What do you mean by the third space?
So like the first space is your home. The second space is like where you work, where you go to work. And the third space are the other spaces that you might go.
It's someone's
so it
bedroom.
Could be church. It could...
if you're lucky.
That would be the first space.
That's why I said, what's the first space?
The third space, it's just like, it's a term that you use. So it could be your community garden. It could be
a bar.
The church, it could be a bar, it could be the library, it could be a bookstore, but especially because of the pandemic, there's been this loss of third space community and people are being more and more isolated. And so I think part of what you're speaking to, Nagin, is that people also just like want to have a communal space to be in regardless. But I think the thing that I wish the piece talked about more is I think another reason people have turned away from the church and organized religion is because of not just the scandals, but also sort of the like bigotry and judgment that is sometimes found in organized religion. And I think a lot of people realize like I might have a gay child or I might have, you know, a child who has quote unquote sinned. And like, it's too hard to be in community with people who don't understand or won't understand, or the rules are as such that women can't be priests, or the rules are as such that like certain people aren't welcome here. And I think that that's also really challenging is like, do you want to make time for organizations that have that built into them? And does that feel like the best use of your time and supporting of your family and your worldview? And I think we also have like this inability to, as Americans, to talk critically about issues and to really like dig into things and find the nuance. And the reason this is coming to me is I read a book this year called Hijab Butch Blues by a queer, non-binary Muslim woman who is an immigrant to America. And the book is fantastic. And she digs into different stories from the Quran and talks about her own life and her own experiences. And it's this really critical, nuanced conversation about, you know, Jonah and the whale or Ishmael or whoever. And it's what I loved about the book and what I wish we had more is that Lamia H., the author, they dig in and say, you know, maybe there was this thing, this queering in the Quran, and maybe I wish we could talk about it this way. And this translation of the text makes it sound like this. And there is space for me in this community. And I wish that more organized religion was open to that, because I think that would move us forward as the rest of America tries to move forward having these conversations and grappling with these texts and with these rules.
But I think it's about, if you have a faith, then you can't pick and choose, you know what I mean? Like, I understand your point about it being inclusive, I suppose is the word. But I think if you believe in the faith, then there's certain things that you just kind of have to conform to or accept. And that's part of the kind of the thing. Whereas,
well, right. And I think that that's why people aren't wanting to stay, because
they don't want to do the conforming. Right.
Who they
but
are.
I think if you,
they'd rather deal then, and talk about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but I feel like conversations are definitely happening more. And I think that there's more of a revival in terms of like, definitely what I'm seeing online, there's a lot more open conversation about God's kind of remembering God. And I think going back to Nagin's point about how busy we are, and in Islam there's this beautiful kind of reminder that like, if you put God first, God will put you first type of thing. So if you make time for God and the things that you're supposed to be doing as like a Muslim, then like all of your worldly affairs will kind of fall into place. You don't have to try so hard. So I think it's a matter of faith. And if you put that effort into those kind of, if you put your faith in God, basically, that those things will come into place. That, because we do often pray to God for what we want, like to get what we want. Where it's like a lot of the things that I've achieved, I don't feel like I've achieved them. I feel like it's a blessing from God. And so it's just nice that it can be a little bit more mainstream, because I feel like religion, unfortunately, has felt like it's been a bit demonized for some time now. And I understand what you're saying about people trying to, I don't know, accept kind of just embrace different kind of, I don't know, people or different faiths or whatever it is, like just embrace others. But at the same time, it just feels like it's had such a bad rep. And I think COVID and so many different things after that highlighted its importance and place But it just feels like it was kind of popular, because that's another thing that kind of, like, off your point, is that we just don't seem to talk about the problems where it comes to religion. It just feels like, okay, we'll just blame it for the wars, blame it for this, blame it. But actually, it's people at the end of the day. Like your point about some of the people being quite judgmental or whatever, it's not necessarily the faith, it's the people. So that's going to be whether you have a faith or you don't have a faith. Like, people are always going to be people, and so it's about us coming together, however we can try and do that.
It's interesting. I mean, it's true that you know, the piece points out that participation in a religious community basically correlates with better health outcomes, longer life, higher financial generosity, and more stable families. So there's a lot going for these communities actually surviving and thriving. Like, it would be probably a net good. But also there is this, like, shift in society, and where some of the details of how something gets practiced end up being really important. To Tracy's point, on kind of churches figuring out how they can be more inclusive. There was an interesting thing that he just referenced in the piece really quickly. It was a kibbutz style Christian church where they live communally and share money. And it's funny because I clicked on the website of this church because I was just so curious about it. And it was like, I mean, who knows, right? Because this is their PR, like, website. But it was all this, like, just beautiful families, diverse families, like, playing in, like, you know, fields. But I also was just like, well, that's something people need, is literally everyone living together so there's childcare. So it's also like, can the church offer something that is useful in the modern context? And you look at, like, an example like that, and you're like, well, that actually seems like it's useful in the modern context. You know what I mean? Because sometimes just studying the text is not gonna change the equation for, like, how difficult it is for you to figure out competing children's schedules throughout the week or whatever. You know what I mean? The things that kind of make parents insane and then too tired to go to a church. Folks, there's so much we could say about this, and we don't have time. We have to move on. But I am so curious from listeners. You got four religions from three people on the math doesn't work out, but we made it happen. So tell us what you think. What your thoughts are on this topic, and do you have any hot takes on why there's so much decline? All right, let us move into topic number three. Time magazine issued their 100 best films of the past 10 decades, and I thought we would talk about it. There's some obvious ones, like Gone with the Wind is still on the list. And in fact, I have a hard time knowing what makes sense from the 20s to the 50s. some like It Hot's on there, a comedy. I always think there's not enough comedy on these lists. Vertigo is on there, Bonnie and Clyde. And it's funny because if you look at it, the leading men in the posters don't have muscles. I don't know if either of you noticed this.
Oh, there's no Dwayne Johnson movies on there?
No, there's like no. Well, I mean, in the later, no, actually don't think there is. But just the men that are in, there's like a couple of shirtless dudes in the posters from, you know, the 20s through the 70s.
Marlon Brando on the waterfront looks pretty bulky.
Oh, yeah.
But maybe
yeah.
He's the only one.
But there was like, I can't remember who else. Oh, yeah, there was a shirtless poster from the movie Breathless, which is like a Jean-Luc Godard film from 1960. And the lead is just, he just looks like a skinny guy, but he's supposed to be, you know, this like sexy lead. We can get into some specifics, but is there anything that jumped out at you, Tracy, that you felt like was missing or that you wish you had seen or something about this list that struck you?
I was thinking that there might be some musicals on here, like Sound of Music or Singing in the Rain. Like, those are iconic, fantastic films.
Those aren't on the list.
I thought for sure we would get, or maybe Oklahoma. I don't know. I just thought for sure we would get a classic
West Side movie Story. Musical. Yeah.
West Side Story. Yeah, they're just not here, which is, I'm a musical theater lover, so that's a bit of a bummer. And I think the first movie that's like by or like centers a black person is in 1992. I think Malcolm X is the first time we see like a black lead show up in any of these. So that always, of course, is going to catch my eye.
But I also thought in terms of Malcolm X, I thought that was like, I wouldn't choose that from Spike Lee's oeuvre. You know what I mean?
What would you do? Do the Right Thing?
Jungle Fever. Yeah,
I think Malcolm X is like the seminal.
So basically, what we're saying is the only movies on there with black actors or black kind of representation is about like racism and adversity. And I think that's a big problem.
Well, it's also,
I mean, that's a problem in cinema, period.
I mean, but it's also like
allowed to show
we're
up.
Looking at stuff in, you know, we're looking at stuff in the 90s. This is like where there's like the kind of, you know, blaxploitation era of filmmaking. But in then, you know, I feel like just being a black filmmaker in the 90s already was so unusual that
there were like,
you know, I really like There Will Be Blood. And I'm shocked that that's not on there.
Yeah.
I needed therapy after watching that movie.
And here's another one that I thought was weird. I thought it was weird that Jackie Brown was on there.
I thought so
instead
too.
Of Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, like, he's got two Quentin Tarantino. Yeah. I also thought it was weird that Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was on and not
Inglorious Bastards. Yes!
Or Django. I think Django's a fantastic film. I know that's controversial, but I love Django.
Yeah, I had a hard time.
I know.
A lot of people. But Inglorious Bastards is one of those movies that just sort of like took the world by storm in a way that I felt like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood just like, I don't know. I just didn't get it.
Wait, I have one specific thing that made me rage about this list. And this is a very specific to me thing, but the world needs to know. As you know, I have very specific rage points. But Little Women, Greta Gerwig's Little Women, is nowhere fucking near the 1992 version with Winona Ryder. Okay? I don't care. This is a travesty of film cinema. If you're going to put Little Women on, and I don't necessarily think that either of them is the best film of
the last
100
years. Maybe neither of them should be on.
Yes. But like, you're not going to disrespect Claire Danes like this, okay? You're not going to disrespect Kirsten Dunst and Susan Sarandon. I'm sorry.
That Florence movie Pugh, was stacked.
You're lovely,
Training Day. Training Day should have been on there.
Oh, yeah. Training
Day is a great film.
Yeah, Training Day's not on here.
Very scary.
No, but your Little Women take is interesting because I think that the Greta Gerwig version is largely considered the better version, I think, just like by film critics. I don't know. I might be.
Oh, yeah. There's no. I think that Greta. Where's The Godfather in all of this and all the Pacino movies?
So in the 70s, for the 70s, they break it down by decade. It's Godfather 2.
Godfather 1 is so much better.
So I think that's a bit I think there's debate around that, right? Like some people say it's one of those rare movies where the sequel is better than the original. I want to say I don't see very much Sidney Lumet up in this piece, and I thought the Network should have been on the list.
There's never enough comedies.
I can't believe
there's
Taxi
never
Driver.
Enough
I
mean, comedies.
Why?
There's
Taxi
never
Driver?
Enough comedies. Well, Taxi Driver is kind of always on the list. That one,
I
wasn't surprised. I think with lists,
is Woody Allen on here?
Oh, was he removed for reasons of cancellation?
I mean, I personally think that Woody Allen movies are bad, and I know. I think it's just like, you know, when you enter the world, your perspective is your perspective. But like, there's nothing there for me. Like, Annie Hall does nothing for, like, those movies that people love.
That people,
I think you have to be like a certain kind of person who, you know, like, it's just, I don't get the Woody Allen thing, but it is interesting that he's on the list.
I also thought maybe I didn't totally get it because I'm from the West Coast.
Yeah, that's me too.
And there's
something
that's just very Northeast America about it. In the same way that like, you know, I totally have enjoyed Seinfeld, but I wasn't an obsessive in the way that I feel like people who grew up in the Northeast are like obsessive about Seinfeld. That said, again, I'll take that gig if ever anyone
sometimes
needs
the good
me.
Movies are the really bad movies. So I can't believe there's no Steven Seagal movies on here because there's some really amazing.
Right. So my question to both of you in terms of like general list making is, would you rather see movies that really reflect the time, because it's like Star Wars wasn't on here, but what an incredibly huge impact Star Wars had on the entire film landscape was, in fact, I think, and I'm saying this out of my ass here, I'd say one of the first films that established the world of sequels. Is that true? I don't even know. But like, I would argue that it's one of the important
and impactful.
Yeah.
But those are different. This is best. I personally have never seen a Star Wars. Thank you very much.
Oh my God.
I'm like,
I know.
You.
I have some insane movie things.
I'm so glad you said that, Tracy. I didn't know where to look.
I have nothing to say about them, but I understand their impact.
But impact and best are different.
That's
I think these lists are, you know, it's almost like the Oscars, you know, it's kind of like representing, it's not representational at all. It's kind of very elitist. If you look at like the chart,
like Marie Antoinette.
If you look at the chart before, like what if maybe before the 80s, like it's all. I don't think there's any representation at all. It depends because obviously everybody's experience of that decade or movie would be different to them. So it's probably hard to find a list that is not subjective.
Although I would say, I would say they're just in terms of like, you know, represent. Obviously, there's not going to be like a Muslim filmmaker for the 80s or something. You know what I mean? They'd be, oh yeah, of course. Like that's just like not going to happen in the list that's also very like America centric. There's a bunch of French films on here, but I would say, you know, for me, an 80s list isn't complete unless there's one of those 80s rom-coms on, teen rom-coms, like your Say
Fast
Anything,
Times at Ridgemont High,
your Pretties in Pink,
Breakfast Club, and
your Breakfast Club, you know what I mean? John Hughes movies, like I felt a deep like void not seeing those movies. It's like you can also pick a movie from that genre and be like, this was the best of that genre. Like you don't have to, I think part of this is like, you know, I don't love it when like critics will just be like, just completely not look at a genre. You know what I mean?
Well, I think the thing about a lot of these lists, and I won't give another book recommendation, but I could, is that they're made, who makes the lists, right? And not just who makes the list today, but who has canonically been making, who's been making the canon over decades and decades. Maybe now the room at time is more diverse than it was 20 years ago, but we've already all been told that E.T. is one of the greatest movies, or that The Godfather is one of the greatest movies, or that On the Waterfront is one of the greatest movies. And when we were told that information, it was by straight white dudes. And so that gets put in your head. And it's like, even both of us being like, we've never seen Star Wars. It's like, oh, there's a little bit of like shame or embarrassment. But why? Because some white guys love that movie in the 70s? Like, I don't fucking care. Why am I responsible to that? And so these lists are always going to be subjective. And if I got to make the list, I think Little Women 92 would be on there, but I also think another classic film from 92 would be on there, and it's called A League of Their Own. But there's not women in the room to tell you that, oh, like that movie is worthy enough, or there's not enough black people in the room to tell you that Spike Lee should have three movies on there.
Right.
Like, you know, or that it doesn't.
Yeah, like
have
don't
to
make
be
me choose between Malcolm X and Do the Right Thing.
Right, exactly. And so I think like the canon of film has already been established for us for so long that like a list like this, there's things that people feel like
I definitely see what you're saying, but I also think like if you're like a minority, if you're a woman or whatever, you grow up in the 80s, and I have to be honest, I do think E.T. was one of the best movies of the 80s. Like
No, you're allowed to like a movie that other people like, but I'm saying like these lists are made and they're told to us. So when you see a movie like E.T., you already know that that movie is like, people love E.T. So I'm going to see, like you, even me, like going back and like, okay, I eventually need to watch Star Wars. why? Why do I need to watch it? Because someone else said that it's one of the greatest movies, right? Even if I like it, I'm only seeing it because someone else told me it's
literally one of the best. Why I saw it, just because I wanted to be, I just wanted to know what the references were. I just needed to like know, you know what I mean? Right. I don't.
And whether or not you like it or not, it's not whether or not the movie is good or not. My point is more like these lists have been made for us for so long that when one comes out in 2023, there's expectations that you're going to see certain people or certain things on the list, regardless of if it was actually the best movie of the year or movies of the year.
Any final thoughts on this kind of list making, Sadia?
It's just annoying that the only stories they like to see from non-white people are about race. Like, it's really, it's not just annoying, like that's obviously an understatement, but it's like, yeah, I think it's following on Tracy's point is that it embeds perception. So people watching those movies will only see us from a particular lens because they're not allowed to, or they haven't been able to see things from, like, they can't laugh at themselves. There's no comedy, or they can't, you know, they can't just celebrate us as rounded people. It's always got to be in a struggle or so. Yeah, that's really disappointing, to be honest with you, in 2023. And I think that, I don't know that much has changed. Like, yes, Tracy's right in terms of the diversity seems to be a little bit more of a buzzword or more prominent, but if it's, I don't know if I believe that there's a substantial change at all.
Like, I think part of the problem is like we can't go back.
Except where's Parasite? Like, where are the Asian filmmakers?
Oh, actually,
that was a problematic movie, though, wasn't it? Let's be honest. But anyway.
Yeah. Parasite was 2019 because it won the Oscar right before the COVID.
They did what they had to do from the race perspective, right? They played the card, and I like the movie.
I just mean, like, there's so many Korean filmmakers who are making fantastic films, and they're not on these lists either. Like, it's just, it's so white centric across the board, and I agree with your point.
But I also think we can't necessarily go back in time and add more
films
that don't exist in the actual
but 2019
Malcolm X, like, there's only those stories they want to see from particular people,
like,
right?
In 2000 there were Black and Asian and Latino filmmakers, and they're just they're not reflected on
Asians,
like Little Women,
like,
I'm sorry,
movies,
it's not a great
they
film.
Like, was it Jumping Tiger? They like the animal flex with
Asian. Crouching
Tiger. They like the animals.
Yeah.
Was that other one?
Well, it was not. That one's not on here.
Slumdog Millionaire. They like the poverty stories with the Asians.
Selma, I'll say Selma in Moonlight.
Moonlight is fantastic. Selma is a wacky.
And
movie.
I am not your Negro.
Is great.
So three,
but that's a documentary.
I think that to me that still counts as a film. But so
no, but it's not. But it's not
three
a
three of
like
the
a
ten
story.
Movies are actually from or about you know. I do want to like give credit where credit. It's not like there's none on here. You know
but
what I mean?
No, it's not
a good
that
movie.
There's not. Well, that's a racism movie. I hate it.
Oh, yeah. It's racism.
I thought you were going to say, I'm racist. Look, the lights went out.
No. I hated Crash. But I think the idea that it only, like, my point is not just that there's, like, not enough representation, but also, like, black-white representation is sort of what I'm getting at. Like, where are the Asian stories? Where are the
Latine
stories?
Like, the everything
Where are the
else.
Muslim stories?
Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
no.
Like, it's like... It's not even until the 2010s that we see
there's
films,
a
and then they're all
a
about
one
like,
and a two, which a movie I'm not familiar with. There's, you know, In the Mood for Love, which is a movie. The Circle. Okay, The Circle is a that comes out of the Middle East. So there are that's an Iranian film, by the way, not to brag, but the Iranians made it on the list. You know, shout out Jafar Panahi. But yeah, so I mean, like, I think, again, I'm not trying to like say this list is awesome because I think it should have more John Hughes on it. I think Anchorman should be on this list. You know what I mean?
All of the John Hughes movies, I really liked him.
Yeah, I mean, completely. Like, I don't see anything that was like Bill Murray was in. I loved him.
Home Alone was pretty good.
They did make an effort to put some movies from other countries outside of France. And because France has been in the game since the beginning. But it also has to do with literally the, you know, in the early days, that was that production, like, and the power of production and the cost of production and the technology of production had not reached every country. Like, Iran didn't have, like, these incredible, this, you know, this incredible canon of film until later, you know? So that's why France is, France got in on it real early, but it's just not something that, you know. Also, there's no, like, Bollywood in
this. Oh, that sucks anyway.
Is, I mean, it does it? I don't know.
There's no animation as well.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Andrew points out there's no animation. That's actually wild. I hadn't noticed that. Next to the no musicals, now we're really like, now I'm going to go into conspiracy theory land.
Yeah, it's just, it's a list of no
fun.
It's
like, hey, we're going to have no fun with 100 movies. The only way the list system can work is if everybody gets a turn, right? Because here, we're just listening to one take. And if it's not going to be every person, but like every whatever, every state, every whatever. I don't know how you could delineate it, but like, this is just one person's take.
And that is a fantastic way to end, because I would love for the people of Faith the Nation to send me their list. It doesn't have to be 100, but give me what would be on your list, separated by decades. I actually just think that the 20s through the 50s are just, it was, film was so, such a baby, that it's really hard to do stuff from those eras, because you can't even see all the silent films and you don't know, and it's weird. But send me your recommendations also. I would love to know what's on other people's. I have some films in my canon, you know, that are not on other people's canon, and you know, I'm curious to know what those are. So people of Faith the Nation, hit me up. And that, my friends, is the end of the show. What a delightful conversation. What a broad range of ideas. I'm so happy I got to talk to you guys about these topics. And I would love for the people of Faith Nation to be able to follow you and all the wonderful things that you do. Sadia Azmat, where do they do that?
Please follow me on Instagram. I'm at Sadia_Azmat. And also I have a website, sadiaazmat.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, but it's so miserable these days. I don't really post that much. And it seems to be ruined as well since I've been away. So, I mean, that's not my fault. But yeah, you can buy my book, Sex Bomb in America. Please support. It's such a cool book. So basically I talk about, obviously for so long, Muslim women have been only portrayed as repressed or very one-dimensionally. So I share, it's my memoir about how I got into stand-up comedy and why sex is a bomb sometimes. What a sex bomb is. How
I
you
love
be a
that.
Sex bomb.
I cannot wait to read this book. That's so exciting.
Sounds so good.
And also particularly interesting to me for obvious reasons. but Tracy, where do they follow you?
You can follow me at the Stacks Pod on Instagram, Threads, TikTok.
Threads, nice.
Yeah, I made the transfer. Nice. I am on Twitter, but I don't really post much either over there. Also, I've always wanted to do this, Nadine, so I hope you'll allow it. I'm on tour right now. Like you, usually when I come on, you're always telling people your tour dates. I'll be in Chicago, New York, DC, and LA over the next few months. So you can find out more about that at thestackspodcast.com/tour. I'm going to be joined by Samantha Irby, Kiese Lehman, Jason Reynolds, and then I have an insane lineup here in LA. So come see me live talking about books and shit.
Oh, that's so exciting. Are you going to be live taping podcast episodes while you're at it?
I'll be releasing those. I'll be releasing those. We did our first tour in Oakland. First stop was in Oakland. Because I have small kids and I've got a crazy life, we're doing like one city a month basically. Yeah. So I'll be Chicago in August, New York and DC back to back in September, and then back in LA in October.
You guys, I mean, absolutely. You've heard her on this show. Now you need to see her live. Hopefully she's coming to a city near you. And I'm sorry, where did they find your tour dates?
thestackspodcast.com/tour.
And then, wait, Sadia, did you mention a website? I just want to make sure that people,
Sadia,
the people know.
Yeah, sadiaazmat.com. I have a free guide on there, 10 things you wanted to ask about my hijab that you were too afraid. So you can sign up to that.
Tremendous. So, folks, and you know where to find me and all the things I do. Just a reminder that I'm going to be in St. Paul on August 18th. I'm going to be in Kansas City on August 19th. Both of those are doing the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me stand-up tour. So, Tracy, this is me doing the thing that you say that I always do.
I like it.
So come,
I can relate.
So come and see me in those cities. If you happen to be in town, it's going to be really fun. Some of your favorite Wait, Waiters are going to be on the lineup, and you will definitely have a good time. And then I will also be in Chicago doing the regular Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on August 24th. So you should absolutely come out to see me there. I'll probably be doing other things in other places in America that I will tell you about later. But for now, just keep those in mind. And I would love to thank everyone who makes the show a possibility. That's our fantastic producer, Andrew McGuire. Everyone who at HeadGum who makes the show a possibility. Thank you so much to Gabby Alter, who wrote our theme music. And if you have any thoughts at all, you can email us at faiththenationpodcast@gmail.com. Ooh, we are going to be starting to turn our attentions to races to watch. That's electoral contests to watch for in the fall. So please email us at faiththenationpodcast@gmail.com with any of those. You've been also reaching out to me on Instagram and on the other places. And sometimes it's easier if it's on email. So I encourage you to use faiththenationpodcast@gmail.com. And otherwise, you guys are the best. And we'll be back in your earballs next week.
That was a HeadGum podcast.